Anyone have a question before with my insider, Chris?
So, David, pleasure to have you here. So, for some people, social media is still not a part of their branding, their business, their daily life. What would you say to someone that isn't currently using social media? What are the benefits, and how did someone like you build a following? What would you recommend to someone that's a little shy or doesn't feel like they have a voice or any value to give to the public?
Yeah, there's four values in social media, and not all of them are applicable to the amplification of your essence, of your value, of your capability. Not all of them. Although when people think of social media and utilizing social media, they only think about amplifying whatever it is or selling. To me, I look at things differently. The first step is to get comfortable with capturing your essence, which is a healthy exercise anyway, because the only certainties that exist in the world are inside of you. And so if all you do for social media today is to capture your essence, to record yourself, you will learn more about yourself. It will bring out all types of reaction to fears, insecurities, things that you may not see in yourself to help you effectively communicate or articulate value. There's so many different things. In fact, a lot of people hire me to help set up their podcast and brand it. I always said, first thing we need to do is do 10 podcasts and don't put them anywhere. First of all, if I can get you to capture 10 podcasts, not only will you learn how to do it better, not only will you learn the equipment that you need, not only will you learn about yourself in the position of what you want to talk about in a podcast, but it'll also put you in the top 1% of all podcasts because most people quit before they get to 10 episodes. So understanding that social media starts with introspective inventory of your skills, your knowledge, and your desire, being able to capture your essence that will resonate with people that are at your frequency or people that abhorrently hate your frequency. I pay attention to both. I used to only capture what resonated with me. I'd hear a cool quote. You know, one of my favorites ever was this guy. He's like, my mom always told me, Dave, you're either humble or you're about to be. And when I heard that, it hit me in the heart. I'm like, holy shit, that's my life. Why did somebody tell me that? I got to make sure I remind myself every day I'm either humble or I'm about to be, right when I wake up, to remind myself no matter how big I think I am or think I get, I am still just part of an infinite, unified, abundant system of intention that protects, love, promotes, and perfects me. I am humble at its core, or I'm about to be if I'm not. But what I didn't learn till later on, understanding social media and capturing, is when I capture something of myself or of somebody else, or I see something that's been captured of someone else, if I hate it, if it bugs me, if I look at it and go, oh man, I don't want anyone ever to see that video, or I see something on the internet, I'm like, what an idiot. That is the stupidest thing I've had. That pisses me off. I pay a special attention to both. I do research and I ask myself, why does that bother me? Why does it bother me that that person has opinion when I don't even know what that opinion actually means because I haven't been able to ask them questions about what they mean by that because everybody gives meaning to what they see and what they capture. You have one power in that certainty of self is that you give meaning to everything you see. Everything you see is a projection of the certainty that you have inside of you. The other expertise, so what I try to do in my life is become an expert at the certain things because otherwise you're just a bullshit and overseller, back-end seller, liar, manipulator, cheater, trying to tell people you're certain about uncertainty. That seems stupid to me. Since I know I am certain about what's inside of me, I become an expert about what's inside of me. And that's what social media is really about. But I also know there's only one certainty outside of you. Does anybody know what that certainty? The only certainty that exists outside of us. God's inside of us. Good guess, though. He's inside and outside, so you're half right. Give me one man-made constructive thing outside of me that's certain.
Time.
Right. So I decided that I'm going to be an expert of me. I am. I'm going to figure out what I'm doing to interfere with me. That's part of that God that you talk about. And the only certainty that I can be an expert at outside of us is the guarantee that God gives us, which is he gives us in the human experience. He gives us 24 hours a day, every day of our life guaranteed. And that 20 hours is exactly as far as the time to the clock, just like the mind to the brain. That 24 hours is exactly the same for you as it is for me. Now, in perception, it's not. Inside of me, it's not. But as far as a clock goes, if I told you all, meet me at this sign for Vituity, where I'm keynoting today, and I'm going to be on stage at 2 o'clock today, and all of you are on time, and you have a clock that's on time, we'll all be there at the exact same time. It's certain. But if I told you, hey, show up, come listen to me speak when you're hungry, I don't think anybody will be there at the same time, including me. I won't know what time I'm there. And that's just the least of our worries when it comes to the circumstantial evidence of the day. The circumstantial evidence of today is us not knowing or understanding it, meaning that why are we relying on it? So many people quit because there's no evidence. And even more people, they quit because the evidence they see each day is contrary to where they think they want to be or better. When it's bullshit, it's not certain. The evidence that you see is not certain, other than if it's, you know, the 30 seconds. That could be evidentiary in a sense, and it will be 30 seconds. But everything else is about the meaning that we give it or project from inside of us. And so become experts of two things, experts of self and experts of time, man-made constructive time. And if you are expert of self and expert of time, you will live in the divine. You will live as part of the unified abundant system of intention that we all belong to, with something bigger than us that knows everything, even the evidence, is all powerful, will give you more energy when you figure out what you're doing to interfere with, and then people will believe, even when you're as old and out of shape as me, you will blow everyone away. They will not be able to keep up with you. My 25-year-old self was in incredible physical condition, cannot keep up with me today, I promise you, because I've learned not to interfere with an all-powerful source of energy that I had when I was 25. But I had so much physical capability, and being young, I could interfere with it so much and not be as tired as I am today if I interfere with it this much. And so becoming and understanding I am, how is it relative to man-made constructive time in the divine direction, in the divine detours, in the divine time, all knowing that we don't know or understand it because we ourselves only have two certainties, self and meaning, that exists inside of us, right? I talk about behavior. Someone asked me today on my training, give me an example of how your good behavior could be my bad behavior and your bad behavior could be my good behavior. Because I said, good behavior is self. Good behavior is aligned with where you want to be, not where I want to be. Bad behavior is that which interferes with where you want to be, not what's missing, what you don't have, or what other people want for you. And so for me, good behavior, according to where I want to be or better, is waking my ass up at 4 a.m. every day or earlier and having an unwinding routine at 9 p.m. Pacific time. Now, that's because I know where I want to be or better, and that aligns with that. But if you want to do something that's different, like where you want to be or better is to be able to do something at 2 in the morning, I don't think waking up at 4 in the morning is going to be a good idea. I think that'll be bad behavior because it'll interfere with where you want to be or better in whatever activity you want to do at 2 a.m., which is your choice, not mine, not your mom's, not what's missing, not what you don't have. So social media to me represent how am I capturing my essence and giving me an availability first to be comfortable with self, then to figure out the strategy by hiring people. How do I edit it so other people will be aligned with my divine? How do I amplify it so more people will be aligned with my divine? And then most importantly for me and the exponentiality of the divine is how do I perpetuate my essence so that more people that I never talk to can hear my name, see a video, and go down the Dave Meltzer social silo and be within the context of my essence or my frequency of that perpetual content. I promise you, way more people know Shakespeare than they do David Meltzer. So he understood somehow the whole world was a stage. It was just a matter of what? Man-made constructive time. See, he knew divine time. He knew that I'm going to capture my essence of human nature, and it's going to resonate with everyone that comes upon it. Even someday, everyone in the world will come upon Hamlet and Othello and all of the greats, Romeo and Juliet. And this story will resonate in divine time, not in man-made constructive time. So although they may laugh at me, scoff at me, and make fun of me when I stand on a stage speaking a language that nobody's going to understand, somehow it's at my essence. And I know those people at my essence, knowing my essence is right at the human nature, then millions, if not billions of people will share in Shakespeare. And I would venture to say that's true. Even though he didn't have the proof that I have or the evidence that I have in divine time that the whole world is your stage. But it starts with capturing who you are, understanding what you're doing to interfere with it. That sound fair? All right, next question.
Dude, you look good.
Thank you.
The haircut, or like shape.
I'm working on it. No more round is a shape for Dave Meltzer. But it is a shape. I'm not judging. Does Nick not have the 360 camera?
I'll grab it.
Okay.
I've been following you for 2 years. You coached me, you mentored me, and I want to thank you again for all of that because I'm at the point where I incorporated finally, and I went to my first trade show to get a look at the industry that I'm in. And like you said, you know, 20% of the people are going to love you. 20% of the people are going to be like, not like you. And then some of them were indifferent and some had some interest. So coming back with all those cards, all those relationships and all those connections, it's kind of overwhelming on how to kind of strategize on how to move forward. What do you suggest for someone like that in an early entrepreneur? I'm pre-startup. I'm going to launch in May.
So I've actually shifted. A lot of you have been in my private coaching group. And now we have thousands of people in my private coaching group, which at the time consisted of a Monday morning group at my non-time. Just so you know, non-time is a way to play with man-made constructive time. So non-time meaning, hey, I'm going to do this for you on Mondays when I'm free. So I'm going to let you know 2 o'clock this Monday, 1 o'clock next Monday, 9 a.m. the next Monday. Schedule time is extremely important, right? If I schedule you every Thursday at 4 o'clock, I'm screwed because that limits me being free. Free to me is doing what I want, when I want, with who I want for as long as I want. And if I schedule shit, that fucks up doing what I want, when I want, with who I want, as long as I want, even if I can afford to do it. And that's where people who are super rich get in trouble is they don't know the difference between non-time and schedule time. So I have transferred my coaching into daily coaching with a private networking group for this reason. Because so many people can't handle the options, opportunities, and touches of favor that they get from one trade show. They can't do it. So they capture, because there's technologies that capture it so easy, they capture so many people that actually are resonating with you that are interested. And then there's some that are kind of interested, and then some who hate you or they're just not aligned with what you're doing. So I've created a private networking group that says, hey, look, join a curated group of people, have access to me every day, not just counting Mondays. I'll make myself available still on non-time, but every single day, join the private networking group. So when you come home from this, you can have a 4-step distribution model or an execution model that says, I capture no matter where I am in person, on the phone, via email or media, social or traditional, I capture all options, opportunities, and touches of favor. I then distribute those according to the capabilities of the people in my relativity or my network, meaning internally, I'm going to keep the best ones that are aligned with what I do. And then I'm going to distribute externally to the people that have the capabilities to best suit the options, opportunities, and touch of favor. Life insurance, solar, you know, rental property, whatever it would be. And I'm going to use an overlap agreement, which is a virtual handshake. Yeah, I've been trying to figure out how can I explain the idea of an overlap agreement that says that everyone I meet, I want to know what you like and what you don't like, and I want to give you more of what you like and take away what you don't like. And I want to have a virtual handshake that says, Marco Antonio, if I give you more people that you like, you're going to pay me a portion of what you make off of them. And if you bring me more people I like, I'll pay you a portion as well. But it's a virtual handshake that's a memorialization so that I remember, what was that name of that guy in San Diego that sells IULs? That wants to be a sports agent. Oh yeah, I have the notes in a handshake. And that handshake is just like old school, but except we have technology to remember, remind what exactly we promised to do for each other, because I don't have a good memory. I cannot remember everyone's name that's here, and I met most of you. And I certainly can't remember how I can be of service or value, but I can go in my Outlook and we have an overlap agreement and find all of you and how I can be of service or value and distribute and make money and help people and have fun all at the same time. By being part of this private group that we have handshakes, the other part of memorialization is you don't get into this hurt side of it of binding each other to an unrealistic expectation, because people bind themselves via an agreement, not with the old handshake. See, the old handshake, the good thing about it was nobody was scared about being sued, right? The old handshake said, hey, brother, this is what we're going to try to do with each other. You're going to remember that I'm a dentist. You're going to remember I do LASIK surgery. If you bring me a dental client, I'm going to give you a Starbucks card. If I bring you a LASIK, you're going to give me $50 on Amazon because that's what I want. That's what I like. You're going to give me more of that, and that's what you like. Now, a handshake also says, hey, brother, you brought your sister, but I thought it was more important. She seemed like she's having a financial hard time. So I thought it'd be more advantageous. I went ahead and discounted her $100. So I really can't afford to buy you the Starbucks card this time. You see how the different energy and the different abundant feeling it is when you have a memorialization that's based off a reality that time, emotion, and value changes even after agreement or a decision is made? And so I'm creating this community of thousands of people all over the place that will have virtual handshakes with each other so that when you get back, you get to cherry pick the ones that are best for you. And then you go ahead and create opportunities for other people and make money, help people and have fun that way. Because there's thousands of people, just ability to search. That's what I believe will create the mission, the community that will bring the commissions. The commissions will follow that. Too many people in these type of agreements, referral agreements, broker dealers in the world, they're all about the commission and it fucks up the mission. Because instead of the family getting the discount who really needs it when he doesn't need a Starbucks card and I don't need an Amazon card, but his sister really need the kids to get their teeth done at an affordable price, I now know under the context of a memorialization or an agreement that overlaps our lives within reason and context that time, value, and emotion changes. I'm going to align that under a virtual handshake and say, bro, we're just here to help each other. We're not going to cheat each other, but I'm going to communicate with you so that you know that. And so that we don't start, oh, he's an idiot. He cheated me out of $50. My sister went there and she's not communicating because she's embarrassed that she got a discount. And so all of a sudden, Eric hates David Meltzer because he didn't give him the $50 Starbucks card when I was trying to be a good guy. That's what we're creating. That's what we're doing here. That's why you should join that group. That's why you should be a part of a community that helps each other and knows people that will help one another. And so in the model, it's capture, distribute internally and externally according to the capabilities, preferring the people in your private network and that you have an overlap agreement with or can create one with. Then prioritize all of your opportunities each day according to your non-negotiable behavior that's not circumstantial and your negotiable behavior that is circumstantial according to day, like your sister needs the kids to get their teeth done. That's circumstantial. And then we prioritize accordingly. And after we prioritize all options, opportunities, and touches of favor, we then either execute on them or according to the circumstances of the day, we may decide to redistribute them internally or externally again. And in this cycle creates abundance. It creates a whole bunch of people that are giving more. They're elevating their awareness of being given more. They feel comfortable receiving more and even asking for more so they can give more than more, be given more than more, receive more than more, and ask for more than more than more. So when you're 80 years old, instead of living in some dumbass zero-sum game where you keep giving more than you receive, which I promise you mathematically, if you give more, no matter how good, kind, and nice you are, if you give more than you receive, you're going to end up at zero. It's math. It's not spiritual. What's really spiritual is to have faith. There's more than enough of everything for everyone and to give more, be given more, receive more, and ask for more than more because you know there's more than enough. And you know you're going to give more than more to end up with more than more than more than more. Does that make math sense to you? It makes math sense to me. All right, next question.
All right, so.
Do you know as I get older, I must spit more, Colleen, because people will not come close anymore. When I was young, they were like right up on my shit. I feel like my law professor that used to tell me, sit in the front row, you'll learn more, and then spit all over me the entire thing.
All right. Well, I'm here I am then. Hi. You can spit on me. Hi. Okay. I eat men's sweat for a living, so that doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
So, jiu-jitsu. Okay. So now I'm distracted. My question to you is, I know that you have a lot of coaches and I know you have a great team. For someone who's just starting out, how did you handle the overwhelming stress? I've made a lot of mistakes in my business where I take on the stress and then it trickles into my work. Mm-hmm. And I'm like you, where I want to have a lot of fun and create like this beautiful atmosphere like you create. But I have jeopardized things because I've been so overwhelmed and it's trickled in. So before you had the coaches and the team, How did you handle that and continue?
Does anyone ever feel overwhelmed still? Anybody ever procrastinate because they feel overwhelmed, meaning you don't do? Yeah. So understanding feeling overwhelmed is actually a point of gratitude for me. So when I feel overwhelmed, which is almost every day, I say, thank you, God, for giving me more than enough options, opportunities, and touches of favor. So many that I don't know which one I should do. So how do we alleviate that is a methodology of prioritization. See, prioritization is the antidote to feeling overwhelmed. If you know what's important to you, then you're going to know what to do now and know what to do next. If you know what to do now and know what to do next, it's impossible for you to feel overwhelmed. And especially it's impossible for you to procrastinate because you're doing shit now and next. And you're continually doing shit now and next. And so thinking about the two ways that we prioritize. One way we prioritize that will give you 90% of the results in your life. The one way that we do it is understanding what is most important to you, to me, that I'm committed to do every single day of my life, regardless of the circumstances of the day, regardless of the fires, regardless of the interest rates, regardless of our in-laws, regardless of anything, any circumstance, what am I committed to do every single day, knowing that if I can do something for 2 minutes a day, 7 days a week, it's worth 2 hours on a Saturday. So I have, in the first realm of prioritization as an antidote to feeling overwhelmed, non-negotiable behavior. Every day, no matter what the circumstances is, I'm going to get a minimum of 7 hours of sleep to recover effectively and access information for tomorrow at its highest source. Two, a minimum amount of time on my health. If I'm healthy, I get as many days at quality and wishes as I want, as many definite asks that I want. If I'm unhealthy, I usually only have one ask. So I'm going to spend a minimum of an hour a day on my health, no matter what the circumstances are. Minimum amount of time with my family. Too many bullshitters out there, which used to be me, telling everybody, I'm doing all this shit for my family. Really? So you're creating a lack of faith, a lack of health. You're never with your family, all for your family. Somebody better get to you quick because that doesn't seem very logical. You better find a coach, teach you how to prioritize. Because it doesn't sound, you sound like you're talking yourself into something, but you're unhealthy. You're interfering with your relationships with the most important people in your family out of the name of doing it for your family. Doesn't make sense. So non-negotiable behavior, for me, those things plus finance, faith, studying time, and relativity in my life are non-circumstantial. So that equals about 10 and a half hours with sleep. 7 hours of sleep, 3.5 hours of non-negotiable behavior every single day. And I don't have to worry about the interest rates or the rain or fires. I don't have to worry about any of that shit because I am committed with faith that I'm going to do this a minimum amount of time every single day. Then it leaves 13 and a half hours to do whatever the fuck I want, when I want, with who I want, for as long as I want, according to the circumstances of the day. The variant behavior that makes life so enjoyable. You see, the formula to the purpose, passion, and profitability you want in your life is to be able to enjoy, right? We're able to enjoy what we don't like or don't love, enjoy what other people don't like or don't love, enjoy it by having variant behavior according to the circumstances of the day, but still be committed consistently, persistently, in the pursuit of a divine direction, of a trajectory of where you think you want to be or better, with the humility, knowing I don't know what I don't know. And even though the evidence isn't here or the evidence is contrary to where I want to be or better, I still am committed to the consistent, persistent pursuit of that potential. But I'm able to enjoy the non-negotiables that are that consistent pursuit because I have about 13 and a half hours of awake time. Of my 17 hours of awake time, 13 and a half hours awake time, a variant behavior that says I can do what I want, when I want, with who I want, for as long as I want, according to the circumstances of the day. And that formula is how life tells you all its secrets. It gives you your cheat codes. It makes it easy because it identifies what's putting you at dis-ease. And that's the secret to know I am, what am I doing to interfere with it? I am at ease. I am healthy. I am wealthy. I am worthy. I am important. What am I doing to interfere with it? That is the key to prioritization. Prioritization is the antidote to feeling overwhelmed. Feeling overwhelmed to me is a blessing, and there's an antidote for that blessing as well. All right, next question. Right here, Jessica.
Thank you for...
Nick, 360 camera?
We can add an extra piece of equipment.
You didn't try it out?
still even
actually. Did you try it out?
I did not try it out.
Okay. Are you accountable?
Always.
So you tried to slip one by me?
No.
Okay. Go ahead.
So my question of the day is, first of all, I just want to say thank you for inviting me out here. I love San Diego. I love this Legacy Center.
Yeah, this sucks.
And I just...
All those guys with good football teams, it may be 9 degrees there, but...
So I realized one day, I had this aha moment. I've been obsessed with books my whole life. I grew up without TV.
Good one you have there.
Yeah, thank you for this book. It's helpful. And I realized one day that I was reading a lot of books, but I wasn't necessarily implementing all the ideas, great ideas that I would get. I had notebooks full of ideas. And so I'm starting up a podcast. I just went to PodFest, and I'm really excited about basically taking this idea of encouraging people to live out ideas in helpful books like yours and implementing them. And so I want to create community in San Diego to start with of people that want to, whether it's like improve their health or wealth or whatever it is, that we're going to like live out together. Because I feel like a lot of times we have good intentions on like taking the ideas in books, but they sometimes just sit on our shelves.
Of course.
So I was wondering, what is your, would you be your tip for creating like a really awesome community in San Diego around this idea?
Good idea. So first of all, this is a major problem. And I get a reminder every month, a $1,200 bill for a storage facility, because I used to be like you. I took notes in college, law school, business school, Tony Robbins, Wayne Dyer, the list goes on.
Bob Proctor.
And I'd write down all from the, not only the books, but the speeches and the workshops and the masterminds. And I figured if I'm paying money, I might as well capture all this shit. And then it went into those books just like you. And then they went into storage. And what I realized was I would have been much better off just capturing what resonated with me, either strongly agreed or strongly disagreed, captured it into a searchable format, the lesson, and then apply my own story to it. So I heard something like, be more interested than interesting. And the story around that was I went, when I was in college, I wanted to be a doctor, and I went and saw my brother, who was a doctor, went into the hospital, and he looks at me and he said, what's the matter? I said, I hate hospitals. And he's like, you're going to be a doctor, dude. I was like, yeah, I'm going to be a sports doctor. I'm not going to be in hospitals. And he looked at me and he said, David, you need to be more interested than interesting. Now, I've told that story at least 1,000 times in a whole bunch of different ways, but it sits within a repository because that's one of the lessons to me that resonates most every day, like being humble or you're about to be. And so all I do is put a notation of a story, maybe from the book, maybe from somebody else, maybe made up, something that best tells that lesson so that I can just have a note, not a script, but remember or a search and remember the lessons that apply to the situation the most. And so if I was going to start a group, I would start a group that starts with, hey, we are going to meet either in person or virtually. Since it's all in San Diego, I would do it in person and say, bring your number one lesson for the week that resonates most with you and tell a story to teach us. And you take the people and just like AA, you stand up and say, hey, I'm Dave Meltzer. I am. And my brother told me when I was 18 years old, because I wanted to be a doctor, to be more interested than interesting. And I have learned the lessons by this. And there's so many 18-year-olds that do the same thing for me, come up to me and say, I want to be a sports agent. I'm like, what does that mean to you? And then they realize maybe I should be more interested than interesting. Find someone that sits in the situation I want to be in. Ask them for directions since they spent the last 30 years being a sports agent. That's how I'd start it. You got it. All right, next question.
My brother. Feels weird seeing you, not giving you a hug.
All right. I heard
I love you, man.
You hold someone for 8 seconds. There's actually, it's a healthy
come back.
There we go. I'll take all your energy.
5-1,000, 6-1,000, 7-1,000, 8-1,000.
My brother.
Good. It's not taking my energy. It's clearing the interference between our energy, right? It's not taking any energy away. Energy exists. It's infinite. It's what are you doing to interfere with it? And if you shift your paradigm and your mindset to understand I'm just interfering with it by what I start with the four basics, right? What do you need to live? Breathe, water, food, and sleep. So become an expert at breathing, drinking, eating, and sleeping. You're going to be way ahead of the game because those are the things that people do incorrectly that interfere with their potential. All right, go ahead.
You know, lately you've been talking about this concept of social silo. You know, can you elaborate what that means and how that plays into us trying to attain our greatest potential?
Yeah. So I started out like everyone else believing you're the aggregate of the five people that you spend the most time with, which is incorrect, because if you're a mom like Colleen, she may spend the most time with 9-month-old or babies. And trust me, Colleen's not an aggregate of 9-month-olds. And so understanding social silo is that we actually have to find teams that we want to play for, but we also have to be intentional about what position on the team we want to play. Sometimes we want to be the water boy. Sometimes we want to be the coach, the owner, the forward, the center. What position do you want to play according to where you want to be or better? And yes, aggregating yourself with that energy is absolutely the fastest way to get to where you want to be or better, because the fastest way to get to where you want to be or better is find someone that's already there, have them give you directions or help someone get to where they want to be. And that's being part of this team. A social silo is a virtual team. And so there's two usages, again, of a social silo, the same way as the team. So a social silo can give you directions to where you want to be or better by people who are feeding you information through technology from your social silo. So if you watch TikTok every day, you're being fed into your social silo. But on the other side, if you capture your own content like I do and perpetuate it, I have my own social silo. So I'm feeding Marco Antonio, but I'm also using it to attract more people. But the essence of a social silo is a team. So you have to decide what position do you want to play on your team to what? Find people to help you get to where you want to be or help people get to where they want to be or better. And so if the information in either direction is not feeding you in the direction that you want to be in or better, then go ahead and switch up your social silo of what you're either inputting or what you're feeding. And don't get confused on the feeding and bleeding thing. I spent many years in humility, like I said, knowing you're either humble or you're about to be, telling people, feed that which feeds you, fire or fall away that which bleeds you. Well, it's true, feed that feeds you. But what I didn't understand at that time in my life is that some things that bleed us, feed us. Like a 9-year-old, right? A 9-year-old will bleed the shit out of you, but nothing will feed you more. So you have to have a subtlety and understanding of the bleeding and feeding relationship beyond. But a social silo is a team, the same way as you may be here on this team or on the Virtuity team or some other team. Your social silo is getting directions to where you want to be or better, or giving directions for other people to get them to where they want to be or better, which is the fastest way to get to you, to where you want to be or better in your divine direction of where you think you want to be. But if you're, most people, they're not conscious of either. You know, they think they're just posting and they don't realize that they're creating a social silo for people to take in who they are or get directions to where they are. And they definitely aren't aware of what they're being fed. And it is very, very powerful today because it'll keep on feeding you. It's like, oh my God, you like milk chocolate? All I'm going to do is keep shoving milk chocolate in your face. And then you wonder why all you think about, want, or do is milk chocolate. And that's your whole social silo. That's your perception. That's the meaning that you give to life is milk chocolate. And it's all because you haven't had an awareness to your social silo. Great questions. Thanks, you got it. Next. Yes, sir.
Thanks. Yeah, I have like 3 business ideas, but I don't have any experience in any of those. And I'm just wondering, is it still worth doing a business plan? Is there people that will invest in you if you don't have the experience and not a lot of capital?
There's a million great ideas out there. And so a lot of times we have 3 great ideas. And I'm going to tell you what John Hennessy, the chairman of Alphabet, told me when I told him, hey, John, after I asked him for an honorary degree from Stanford, and he told me I can't handle the work. I'm like, it's honorary. He goes, you can't handle it. But I said, I got this great idea. And he said, where are you in that idea? I said, well, it's just an idea. I really don't know how to implement it, monetize it. I don't have the experience to do it, but I know it's a great idea. And he said, then it's not a great idea. It's just an idea. So you need to go find people that know how to monetize your idea, know how to implement your idea, market and sell your idea in order to facilitate. In other words, find again someone who sits in the situation that you want to be in and ask them for directions. one of the other easier things, because of the access we have to so much information, I get people like this all the time that are very passionate about a philanthropy, a cause, or a purpose, and they want to start their own 501c3. And I'm like, just search to see what already exists and go volunteer for them already. Even though it's not exactly what you want to do, you may find that that billion-dollar charity has much more resource and capability in order to effectuate your idea within the context. And instead of spending all your time duplicating what's already created, you're now enhancing something that has a huge platform and impact on the world. And your idea now has exponentiality to it. The same thing holds true in business. If you haven't done the research, you're not more interested than interesting about your idea of what ideas exist today, what businesses exist today that are synergistic, supplementary, or complementary to what you want to do in your idea, then you haven't even got started. And it doesn't mean it's a bad idea. It just means it's not a developed idea. I think that's what John Hennessy was trying to tell me. So take the time with your ideas, if it's resonating with you, and there's three of them, to figure out how to build that idea and prioritize it accordingly. You can go after as many businesses as you can. It's just a matter of time, by the way. So many people are like, what do you think about this? I should only be, well, not really to me. You should be non-negotiable at about a minimum amount of time on whatever activity you think you want to do, which only will take up, including sleep, somewhere between 10 and 13 hours, leaving you about 11 hours at most left to do what you want, when you want, with who you want. Your whole life will be taken care of in all of your three businesses within the context of that consistent, persistent pursuit of your potential.